Blog Talk Radio.
Well, we had an interesting weekend, a lot of rain and thunder, lightning, wind. It's kind of a nice break. And a little bit cooler yesterday, I guess. But I'm sure there's more rain and storms headed this way, at least hopefully. Good morning. 26th of June. And we are going through an extremely hot spell here. I don't need to tell you that. Stories today include the Obamacare into Trump care fight and Rand Paul having some real opinions on that. Justice Kennedy has indicated he may be retiring. Now, I saw somewhere last night they were stating that he was the oldest member on the court. I don't know if they meant longest tenure, but there are other people that are older. I think he's 81. There's another person. Ginsburg is 83 or 84, and she has had cancer. So there's a couple of people on the that have been on there, not just a long time, but are getting towards the end of their actuarial chart and have some. Have some local stories for you as well, but hope you had a good weekend. And I did myself. Now, Rand Paul has got a beef with this healthcare. Yeah, I've got a couple of clips from him. I'm just trying to find the best one. In the meantime, this Russia thing is in the background smoldering, but I just think it's going to end up falling apart because there's no evidence there. So let me just get you a clip from this. Here is a little bit on Rand Paul. The reason I think Rand Paul's position is good to understand is he's going to lay out in a more principled and less partisan manner what's wrong, what he considers to be wrong with the bill. And he is on ABC. Check this out. Rand Paul's criticism of Trump care.
Back now with two of the senators who could determine the fate of Obamacare repeal, Senators Rand Paul of Kentucky, Susan Collins of Maine. I want to start with Senator Paul. Senator Paul, thank you for joining us this morning. You and three other conservatives said that the repeal doesn't go far enough. You say the subsidies are too generous, but you just heard President Trump this morning. He kind of conceded that he called the House bill too mean, that he wants the Senate bill with more heart. That seems to be going in the opposite direction of what you're calling for.
Well, you know, the fundamental flaw of Obamacare was that it added regulations to insurance mandates, which made insurance more expensive, but then it also told individuals, you know what, if you don't want to buy it now, you can wait and buy it after you're sick. That still remains. 10 of 12 regulations that add cost to insurance remain under the Republican bill, and we still say you can still buy insurance after you're sick. If you add those two together, you still get the death spiral. The Republican plan acknowledges that we're going to still have this death spiral, which is sicker and sicker people in the individual market, and the healthy people don't buy insurance. They acknowledge this by putting over $100 billion of insurance bailout money to try to say, oh, we're going to tamp down prices. We're not going to fix the problem. We're going to acknowledge the problem will continue forever, and we're just going to pile taxpayer money into it. That is just not a conservative notion to add a new federal program to bail out insurance companies.
That sounds like a fundamental structural flaw in the program that you're talking about. So is there no way you can get to a yes vote?
Well, what we can do is, if they cannot get 50 votes, if they get to impasse, I've been telling leadership for months now that I will vote for a repeal, and it doesn't have to be 100% repeal. So, for example, I'm for 100% repeal. That's what I want. But if you offer me 90% repeal, I'd probably vote for it. I might vote for 80% repeal.
What percent is it
but
now?
Realize that this – realize – hey, just 1 second. Realize that the Obamacare subsidies in this bill are actually greater under the Republican bill than they are under the current Obamacare law. That is not anywhere close to repeal.
So you're a no right now. You're a no.
At this point, but I could vote if we get to impasse, if we go to a bill that is more repeal and less big government programs, yes, I'll consider partial repeal.
So that means fewer subsidies, lower subsidies?
It means more freedom. It means they have to legalize the sale of inexpensive insurance. Obamacare made it illegal to buy inexpensive insurance. If I'm a 27-year-old guy and I don't want pregnancy coverage, I cannot buy an inexpensive policy. They price me out of the marketplace, and therefore I don't buy it at all, and that leads to the whole death spiral of Obamacare. All of that remains under this, and I'm not voting for something that looks just like Obamacare and still doesn't fix the fundamental flaw of Obamacare.
Your colleague Mike Lee also says he's a no right now. He says, listen, it's very hard to see how he could get to yes. The only thing he can see right now is giving every state the ability to opt out of Obamacare. Would that fix it for you?
It helps, because what that means is you have the freedom to buy inexpensive insurance. You have to realize the Obamacare mandates, regulations, add cost to insurance, price young, healthy people out of the market, and then you get the death spiral that is Obamacare. So if you get rid of the regulations, you may allow inexpensive insurance to be sold once again, and you may allow freedom of choice. Shouldn't the individual in a free country be able to decide what they want for insurance? The government shouldn't tell you what you should have to buy for insurance.
You've got four conservatives like you who say you're no vote now unless you get some fixes. As you know, there are also several moderates who are opposed to the Medicaid cuts, including Susan Collins, who's coming up next. She also doesn't like the denial of funding to Planned Parenthood, believes, along with many other moderates, that the subsidies aren't generous enough. So if it moves in their direction, does it lose you?
Well, the way you can do this is, instead of moving in one direction or the other, why don't we take 25 ideas and keep narrowing it until we get 100% consensus. On all 25 ideas or all 1,000 ideas of how to fix healthcare, there is not consensus probably in any political party. But what if we keep whittling it back to things we have consensus for? Everyone in our caucus is for expanding health savings accounts. Why don't we at least do that? Everybody in our caucus thinks the Obamacare taxes were a punishment on business and opportunity and jobs in our country. Why don't we do that? Everybody in our caucus thinks we ought to repeal at least some regulations. Why don't we repeal some regulations? If there's dissent on Medicaid, why don't we come back in 6 months and say, you know what? Let's work with Democrats and let's do the replace, the new government programs that y'all want. Let's work with Democrats on that. Let's go ahead and repeal the things Democrats will never do. Democrats will never repeal a tax, and they'll never repeal a regulation. And those are two things that are messing up the marketplace.
Doesn't sound to me like you're going to get to yes this week.
I will get to yes if they change their approach, and will they change their approach if they don't get 50?
All right, so here's a little bit more from Rand. Insurance should be available for $1 a day. Now, let me ask you something. Isn't that one of the huge problems with Obamacare? Is it made things expensive? They kept getting more expensive for consumers and for the insurance companies. And so the insurance companies, last we heard, were opting out of major areas and major population zones of the United States.
You have the White House, you have the House, the Republicans have the House and the Senate, but you have these senators that are not on board.
Well, they're also four good guys and they're four friends of mine, and I think that they'll probably get there. We'll have to see.
Well, let's ask one of them. Joining us now from Capitol Hill, Republican Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky. Good to have you on the show this morning.
Thanks for having me.
So, hey, Senator, what's the likelihood that you can be moved from the no column to the yes column? We had Chris Murphy last night saying that at the end you weren't going to be a problem. You'd cave into Republicans.
Well, you know, I want the bill to look more like a repeal bill. I promised people I was going to repeal it. I didn't promise people that I was going to replace it with a federal program of bailing out insurance companies. The fundamental flaw of Obamacare was that we said to people, you can buy insurance after you're sick. And we also added regulations to insurance that increased the price of insurance such that healthy people didn't want to buy it because it was too expensive. Those fundamental flaws still remain. And the Republican proposal is, okay, you can still buy insurance after you're sick, which led to the death spiral, led to the elevated premiums, but we're just going to subsidize premiums by dumping a bunch of federal money into the insurance companies. My problem is insurance companies already make $15 billion a year. I don't think the taxpayers should give them any money. And so I really am opposed to the idea of giving insurance companies money and saying, will you lower your prices? I mean, we could do this for cars. New cars are expensive. We could have a new car stabilization fund.
Yeah. I could have used that like a couple of decades ago. So, so let me ask you this, Senator, and I'm going to pass it on to everybody else here. This is more of a where we ought to be instead of a where we are or where we will be during this debate. But at what point do Republicans or conservatives of all parties actually put together a bill that moves the healthcare system towards free markets? Because right now, healthcare is extraordinarily expensive. We spend more money per patient in America on healthcare than any country on the planet. We don't get the results, and in large part, we don't get the results because the free market is kept outside the door of every hospital, of every doctor's office, of every testing facility.
You're exactly right, and I can summarize the healthcare cost problem in one sentence, and we don't address it. The one sentence is the reason capitalism doesn't work in healthcare is the consumer is disconnected from the product. Consumers do not make decisions based on price in healthcare, except for a few exceptions. LASIK surgery, when you want to get surgery to get rid of glasses, everybody asks the price. The average consumer calls four different doctors. It's a very sophisticated laser, $1 million laser, and yet the price has gone down by three quarters over 15 years. Contact lenses, same way. When you connect the consumer and the consumer cares about the price, guess what? The consumer will shop. And when the consumer shops, competition works. But we're not really doing that in healthcare. Most of healthcare has fixed prices. Medicare, fixed prices. Medicaid, fixed prices. And even private insurance, no consumer shops for price. There's a little bit of competition in what prices come forward, but not really with the consumer involved.
All right.
Mike?
Senator, I want to read a letter to you that's in.
All right. So, in theory, you should be able to get cheap insurance just for catastrophes, right? Because typical person is not going to have a catastrophe. And, you know, a person could come along and decide that they wanted to take the risk of paying normal healthcare costs. And then if there was a catastrophe, then they would have this backup plan. So anyway, I think they're moving in the right direction. I think what Rand Paul was saying was fundamentally correct, though. Pick these things off one by one, work through them. What do you think? 523-1450. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on AM 1450, 523-1450 with Kelly O'Connell. We'll be right back. It's 619.
The journey, I was looking at all the life. There were plants and birds and rocks and things. There was sand and hills and rain. The first thing I met was a fly with a buzz and the sky with no clouds. Thank you.
All right, shifting gears here a little bit. There is a couple of interesting things. On with a Russia thing. Now, one of the things is Chuck Schumer lied and said that Trump was under investigation, which is kind of a weird thing. Here's a little bit on that. Here there's a timeline of the deceit from the Democrat side that played into this constant media drum roll for impeachment. Here's a little bit from Washington Examiner.
Sarah Wester with the Washington Examiner, and we're looking at the investigations into Russian interference during the 2016 election. Senate Intelligence Committee is looking into whether there's evidence to support allegations of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russians during the presidential race. They are focused on four people: Roger Stone, Carter Page, Paul Manafort, and Mike Flynn. Flynn is the former national security advisor for President Trump, who was ousted earlier this year after anonymous leaks suggested he had misled Vice President Pence about the nature of his pre-inaugural conversations with the Russian ambassador. Sally Yates reportedly went to the White House counsel's office in January to warn the White House that Flynn had misled the vice president about his conversation with the Russian ambassador. The Trump White House described those conversations as an informal heads up about what Flynn was discussing with the Russian ambassador, but Yates and her allies have said that conversation looked a lot more like a formal warning about the dangers of keeping Flynn on board in the administration. In fact, former President Barack Obama reportedly warned Trump directly in their first Oval Office meeting that bringing Flynn on board on the National Security Council could be a mistake. Senate Democrats are looking into whether there's evidence that Trump campaign officials colluded with Russian intelligence groups to hack into Democratic inboxes during the campaign. Republicans, on the other hand, are focused whether Obama administration officials were behind the anonymous leaks that led to Flynn's ouster. Susan Rice, Obama's former national security advisor, has been accused by House Republicans of unmasking Flynn's identity for political reasons in conversations that were swept up through incidental collection. The Russian interference investigations are expected to last 4 months. Beyond the Senate Intelligence Committee investigation, the House Intelligence Committee is also looking into allegations of Russian interference, and the FBI is investigating allegations of both interference and potential collusion between the Trump campaign and Russian intelligence officials. For this and other stories, please.
Well, I don't think people have a stomach for this. Here right here, though, I think people have gotten bored with Russia, as there have been repeated claims of something terrible happening from the Trump campaign, and it's never come to light, and people are starting to come to the conclusion that there's nothing really there. Now, here is a little more on something fascinating, but besides Loretta Lynch, the dossier that supposedly had all the damning information, I did some research on that, the dossier that supposedly kicked off the Russian investigation apparently was put together by a gentleman through Google. He didn't go to Russia. He just went online and found all of the rumors that he could about Trump that might lead to Russia, put those together in a report, and he was paid something like $500,000 for this report. It's really incredible. Anyway, here's a little bit from Fox News on that issue.
Us through this. You believe that this is about to heat up and we should be paying more attention to this than the Russia probe. Why do you think this is about to get a whole lot hotter?
Yeah, so these are some major developments and they do not bode well for Democrats. Not only is the Senate now investigating officially the Obama administration for obstruction of justice, but they're also investigating the origins of this discredited dossier that Democrats used to launch their witch hunt against Trump on Russia. And that witch hunt could backfire on them now if this really heats up, like you say, with subpoenas, hearings, and also possibly a criminal investigation down the road.
And why don't you think we've had more coverage in the mainstream media? You would think that they would be at least covering this a little bit. I mean, you look at mainstream media, we've covered the stats over the past 2 days. There's been basically zero coverage of this. I mean, you helped break this story. You're saying it's a big deal. Why is the media not taking it as seriously?
Well, because they're part of the witch hunt. And, you know, a lot of them are Democrat mouthpieces. So that's how it goes. But investigators, you know, they want to know how this dossier that's been debunked, how it, you know, how it came to be, how the sausage was made, and who funded it exactly. They know that Democrats allied with the Clinton campaign, Hillary Clinton campaign, financed it, but they don't know exactly who. And they also want to know why in the world did the FBI rely on this bad intelligence? They knew it was bad intelligence and, you know, designed to smear Trump, but yet they relied on it to investigate Trump. So they, another thing that's more important is they're going to try to find out if the FBI collaborated with this Democrat research group, Fusion GPS.
Tell us about that research group. That's important. They have ties to the Democratic Party. Why is that research group important to this whole story?
Yeah, before I get there, if the FBI did collaborate with this group, because we know that they did try to contract with the author of the dossier for $50,000, if they collaborated with this group, this Fusion GPS, then it really raises serious questions about the independence of the FBI in investigating Trump.
Right.
Now, this group, GPS, Fusion GPS, founded by these former journalists, I'm told that they're actually political activists. They had a vendetta against Trump, and some of them actually financially supported Hillary's campaign for president. This was a Democrat operation from top to bottom.
And how much of this investigation actually hinged on that dossier? I mean, remind people, how significant was it?
Oh, I mean, this whole Russiagate scandal, so-called Russiagate scandal, is predicated on this dossier.
Wow.
The CIA put credence into it, gave it to the White House, attached it to a presidential briefing for Obama. Of course, the FBI has used it. Congress, of course, is using it to cook up these scoops or these charges against Trump. And the media is using it to find scoops on Trump in this investigation. So it's really been wended its way through the entire process. And it's really
right.
Remarkable because the thing is completely riddled with errors in fact and questionable sourcing and debunked all the allegations. It's really a gossip
sheet.
Well,
you know, even Congress has been trying to find more information about this group with possible ties to the dossier, as you've been talking about. But it has been stalled. So where does this go?
Yeah. So now they can't get answers out of Fusion GPS. Quite frankly, they can't get answers out of the FBI as well, because they've got have similar requests for documentation from them. And so now the Senate Judiciary is actually threatening subpoenas against Fusion GPS to try and get answers. And you know, we got to get answers here. We got to get to the bottom of this, because it's really, when you combine with Loretta Lynch and her allegations against her of obstruction of justice in the Hillary investigation, this whole thing is really starting to smell rotten.
Wow.
To shift.
So the claim is it was a made-up dossier and that the FBI knew it was, but used it as an excuse to investigate Trump. Now, the question is, did James Comey know that this was false information that his unit was using, his department was using to try to take down Trump? My guess is he must have known. 632 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. 523 1450. We have local news for you right here.
The heat was hot and the ground was dry, but the air was full of sound. I've been through the desert on a horse with no name. It felt good to be out of the rain.
All right, you're not going to believe the next claim, but this is from Investor's Business Daily. They did an analysis of the claim that Trump made that if it wasn't for illegals voting for Hillary, he would have won the popular vote. And they're saying now, and this is 6/22/17, so about 4 days ago, that there were millions of illegals that were voting. And This comes from True the Vote, an online anti-voter fraud website, and they claim that last year 3 million illegals voted and would have voted for Hillary, of course. Now, Electoral Studies Journal made a similar, that claim was dismissed as being insane and crazy, but the Electoral Studies Journal in 2014 had claimed that in 2008 and 2010, as many as 2.8 million illegals voted or non-citizens. So, interestingly enough, they say that another group called Just Facts, Libertarian Conservative Think Tank, using data from Harvard/U.gov site, they claim in 2008 as many as 5.7 million non-citizens voted in the election, and that in 2012 as many as 3.6 million voted. So in 2016, the U.S. Census Bureau estimated there were 21 million adult non-citizens in the U.S., up from 19.4 million in 2008. And some significant portion of this population did vote. So I've got another weird story for you, kind of tracking along here. The story about the boat collision. Got some more interesting news. Let's take a break and catch our local weather. 523-1450. It's Kelly O'Connelly. I'm Massachusetts AM 1450. Colin, get your opinion on the record. Today is the 26th. We'll be right back. You can't remember your name. There ain't no one for to give you no pain. La 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 la. All right, so this boat collision, this is Reuters. Exclusive: U.S. warship stayed on deadly collision despite warning, according to the container ship captain. And June 26th, from today, a U.S. warship, is this report, U.S. warship struck by a container vessel in Japanese water failed to respond to warning signals or take evasive action before collision, killing seven, according to the Filipino cruise captain. Multiple U.S. and Japanese investigations are underway, trying to figure out how this giant cargo ship was allowed to run into the side of an American warship. And the Philippine ship was called ACX Crystal. And the captain said that they had signaled with flashing lights after the Fitzgerald suddenly steamed onto a course to cross its path. And then the captain says the container ship steered hard to the starboard, that is to the right, to avoid the warship, but hit the Fitzgerald 10 minutes later at 1:30 a.m., according to a copy of Captain Ronald Abensula's report to the Japanese owner of the ship, Dainichi Investment Corporation. And the U.S. Navy declined to comment. A spokesman for the U.S. Navy 7th Fleet said he was unable to comment, of course. Incident spurred six investigations, two internal hearings by the U.S. Navy, and a probe of the United States Coast Guard on behalf of the National Transportation Safety Board. So what happened? How was that ship not better prepared? What, was everybody asleep? Was nobody on lookout? I mean, how do you not see this massive ship steaming towards you? I mean, to me, that's totally incomprehensible. Now they're going over the electronic data and as well, and the ACX Crystal's captain said there was confusion after the collision, and that is when his boat turned around and went back to the site of this collision to see if the American boat was. So I've got something for next hour that I thought that you would find interesting, and it is on, I saw this clip, this guy by the name of Hugh Ross, who's a scientist and he's also a theologian. He's got an explanation for UFOs that is somehow tied into his faith. I thought you would find that a little bit interesting. I've got another story for you, too. Let's come back and hit some local news. Actually, we don't have to come back. We can do a little bit right now. New Mexico drivers are more likely to hit deer. That's according to KOB, and that's a State Farm study. Energy company proposing wind farm in eastern New Mexico. New Mexico man accused of stabbing elderly parents over lack of air conditioning. Now, speaking of running into things with your car, New Mexico drivers, the second most polite in the United States. Do you really think that is true? That sounds absolutely crazy. Well, you know, I don't think the problem is in this town is that people are rude. I think it's that people don't pay attention. We've got more elderly drivers probably than a typical population, but there's a lot of people who don't seem to pay attention and so are not on their toes. There's a lot of people, I don't know if you've noticed this, a lot of people driving under the speed limit. That seems to be a fairly common event, which I don't understand. Here's your deer story.
And your chances of hitting a deer while on the road are on the rise. A new report from State Farm finds New Mexico drivers are nearly twice as likely to collide with a deer this month compared to about a month ago. That bucks the national trend where collisions are happening more often during mating season or the fall. Injuries, vehicle damage, and fatalities can all result from those collisions. So how can you stay safe? State Farm says be on the lookout at all times. Deers are unpredictable and move in groups and are most active between dusk and dawn.
Just like vampires. Could there be a connection? Okay. And let's see here. Get into this story right here. The guy that stabbed his parents for lack of air conditioning. Albuquerque man accused of stabbing elderly parents because he was angry about the lack of an air conditioner in their home. Robert Generosa was not feeling generous when he pulled out his knife and went after mom and dad. He says, "I feel sorry for what happened, you know." Oh, that's the neighbor. It's bad and it's not good. It's family. Is that the conclusion? It's bad and not good, therefore it's family. And they say for years he was a nice guy, but he finally snapped. So I guess the heat is getting to us. Here's his.
Robert Generosa was in court today after stabbing his parents with a knife.
I feel sorry for what happened. You know, it's bad and it's not good and it's family.
Court documents say Generosa got angry when there was no air conditioning in their family home. He started waving a knife in the air and eventually held it up to his elderly parents' faces and shouted he would stab them. Then he cut his father's face several times. He also struck him on the top of his head with the knife handle. Neighbors say they were shocked.
I've seen him for years, and he's always been a very nice individual. You know, waved, he's been very kind.
I stopped by his parents' home today, and his dad told me he and his wife are shaken by the attack and aren't doing well. His face was covered with a large bandage where he was struck. He told me his son suffered a mental episode that night.
Obviously, the son has some problems, you know, and we all... I mean, families have problems and everything else, but, you know, I'm just sorry to see that.
Neighbors I spoke to said this entire street was blocked off with APD and SWAT units until early in the morning.
They just continually, you know, announced on a bullhorn, you know, please come out, you know, we're here, you know, for your own safety.
They say the standoff lasted until 3 a.m. Generosa was charged with aggravated battery with a deadly weapon.
Interesting. Okay, we'll take one last break here. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in AM Las Cruces, and it is 6:49 on the button.
After 2 days in the desert sun, my sin began to turn.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, this is Jerry. I'd like for you to spend some time in a future program about the freedom of the press and anonymous sources.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Sounds
because,
good.
Because the way I see it, the reporter could be the anonymous source. So,
did you, Jerry, did you want to stay on and make a comment?
No, I'm through. I don't want to stay on. I don't need to go on the air. I just like for you to dedicate some time to it in the future.
Okay. Thank you, Jerry. Good
okay,
point.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Got a phone call from Jerry who would like to hear something about anonymous sources sometime in the future, building stories out of anonymous sources. All right, so we'll have to do that. I have for you, well, it looks like I looked for something real quick, but it doesn't look like there's any small clips. But it's obviously a problem if you're building stories out of anonymous sources. You can't fact check, obviously, or the rest of the media can't fact check. Here's a little bit from Ron Rosenstein, number two at Department of Justice.
Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein issued a pretty ambiguous statement Thursday. In it, he warned Americans against believing stories that cite anonymous officials, especially when no details about the source are provided. Rosenstein didn't provide specific examples of what he might have been referring to, but some outlets pointed out the statement was released after both the Washington Post and the New York Times reported Special Counsel Robert Mueller is investigating President Donald Trump for obstruction of justice. Mueller is the person Rosenstein appointed to lead the investigation into Russian meddling in the 2016 presidential election. Both the Post and the Times cited unnamed sources in their reporting. Rosenstein's statement also came hours before an ABC report that claimed the deputy attorney general had said he might need to recuse himself from Mueller's probe. Though, somewhat ironically, that report relied on unnamed sources.
Funny enough. All right, I've got some Tom Papa here for you. Come to Papa. Here's from Conan about a year ago.
Hope you're doing well. I hope everyone's doing okay. I'm worried about you. Everybody's scared. Are you scared? Everyone's so scared nowadays. Everyone's so scared. Some things are scary, I guess. There's no grown-ups left. That's kind of scary. There's no adults left. There's no one left to fight the bad guys. That's kind of scary. There's adult coloring books now. Adult coloring books, and they're popular. I saw a man, a grown man on the floor of an airport, a man laying on his stomach on the floor of an airport, just coloring, just. Why even wear pants? My friend's like, no, Tom, you don't understand. They are adults. I have one. It's a Game of Thrones coloring book. Oh, my apologies. I thought it was something childish, like The Hobbit. I had no idea it was Game of Thrones. That must be stressful with all the snow in that show. Having to use the white crayon, you never really know if it's working or not. No one can deal. How about these people with the fake service dogs? You see these creeps? Fake service dogs. There's real service dogs that help real people. Then a girl shows up with a Pekingese sticking out of a Hello Kitty handbag and tries to tell us it's working and then scams a certificate to show at the gate. I have to have my puppy with me at all times or I'm going to lose my marble. Oh, by all means, welcome aboard. What could possibly go wrong with your crazy ass?
All right, a little bit of Tom Papa there. All right, so going over some of the other stories. There was a professor who was fired because they said that this auto, trying to remember the guy's name, the guy that died because of being in North Korea, Warmbier. Otto Warmbier got what he deserved. If you believe that, somebody saying that? Pretty sick. I have for you also coming up in the next hour. I've got some clips from Dershowitz, which I think are pretty good. All right, here's a question, and this was, I'm trying to remember where this was printed, but I've got the text of it in my notes. Can Trump destroy Obama's legacy? I think this is New York Times. I'm pretty much positive it's from New York Times. When the judgment of history comes, former President Barack Obama might have figured he would have plenty to talk about. Among other things, he assumed he could point to his health care program, his sweeping trade deal with Asia, his global climate change accord, and his diplomatic opening to Cuba. That was then. 5 months after leaving office, Mr. Obama watches mostly in silence as his successor takes a political sledgehammer to his legacy. Brick by brick, President Trump is trying to tear down what Mr. Obama built. The trade deal canceled. The climate pact, forget it. Cuba partly reversed. Healthcare unresolved, but to be repealed if he can navigate congressional cross currents. Every new president changes course, particularly those succeeding someone from the other party, but rarely has a new president appeared so determined not just to steer the country in a different direction, but to actively dismantle what was established before his arrival. Whether out of personal animus, political calculation, philosophical disagreement, or a conviction that the last president damaged the country, Mr. Trump has made clear that if it has Mr. Obama's name on it, he would just as soon erase it from the national hard drive. Russell Riley, a presidential historian at the University of Virginia's Miller Center, said, "I've reflected back and simply cannot find another instance in recent American history where a new administration was so wholly committed to reversing the accomplishments of its predecessors." And he said, "This is different, far more comfortable still in swinging the wrecking ball than in developing their own programs." Well, that's one take on it, but I thought it was kind of fascinating. And is it possible that some of it goes back to that show, the Correspondents' Dinner, where Obama humiliated Donald Trump? And if it did in part go back to that, wouldn't that be fascinating? What a mistake. 6:58. On the other hand, you can just say that Obama was not a very good leader and that he's undoing his damage. 6:59, we'll take a break here. A song dedicated to the heat wave we're going through from America. Kelly O'Connell, 523, 1450. We'll be back after a break on the hour.
After 3 days in the desert sun, I was looking at a river bed. And the story it told of a river that flowed made me sad to think it was dead. You see, I've been through the desert on a horse with no name. It felt good to be out of the rain. In the desert, you can't remember your name, 'cause there ain't no one for to give you no pain. La 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 la.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Yeah, this is A Bob, not D Bob, but A Bob. Add to the Russian collusion, the Democrats refused to have Homeland Security help them with the hacking they supposedly had from Russia. On top of that, the WikiLeaks dump of 8,000 documents in February or March, I forget when, said the CIA had the ability to hack computers and make it appear that it came from Russia. Well, it's just all piling up to, this was a pre-planned Democrat ploy that Obama refused to do anything about because he thought Hillary was going to win.
Seems like it to me.
Well, it just all keeps adding up, adding up, adding up.
It is looking uglier for Obama every day.
Yeah, it is. Have a good day.
Thanks, A-Bob. All right, so I've got a little bit on Obama. And the question is, did he fail when he found out, supposedly found out, that there was hacking going on in the election that he didn't do anything more, or what should he have done? Now, Abob, not to be confused with A Mountain, he says that Obama did not call in the Homeland Security, and those 8,000 docs that were dumped by WikiLeaks could have been done by the CIA because they have the hacking tools to do it. Now, here's what Trump is saying about Obama on this.
Criticizing former President Obama for not acting sooner when he learned that Vladimir Putin ordered hackers to help the Trump campaign. Report says the CIA first told Mr. Obama about the Russian president's order back in August. Now, that's about the same time that Mr. Trump claimed the election would be rigged in favor of Hillary Clinton. On Saturday, President Trump tweeted this: since the Obama administration was told way before the 2016 election that Russians were meddling, why no action? Focus on them, not T, which stands for Trump. Chip Reed is at the White House with the latest on this story. Chip, good morning.
Well, good morning. Up to this point, President Trump has been reluctant even to acknowledge that the Russians interfered in the 2016 election. But now that he has someone else to blame, it's become a major talking point.
I just heard today for the first time that Obama knew about Russia a long time before the election, and he did nothing about it.
In an interview, President Trump attacked his predecessor for allowing Russian meddling in the election to go unanswered.
The question is, if he had the information, why didn't he do something about it? He should have done something about it.
The Washington Post reported Friday that the Obama administration knew the Russian government was interfering in the election in August of last year, but didn't make it public until October 7th. They also had intelligence confirming that the Russian goal was to defeat Hillary Clinton.
Given the seriousness of this, I think the administration needed to call out Russia earlier.
The top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff, usually a critic of Mr. Trump, echoed his charge.
I think the Obama administration should have done a lot more when it became clear that not only was Russia intervening, but it was being directed at the highest levels of the Kremlin.
Former President Obama's spokesman, Eric Schultz, said the situation was taken extremely seriously, as is evident by his raising of the issue directly with President Putin. The Obama administration also shut down two Russian government compounds and ejected 35 Russian diplomats in late December.
Russia is not our ally. Russia is not our friend.
West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin said both a public admission and a response should have been more swift.
What was known back in August, and once it was verified and cross-checked, should have been made public. It should have been made public, okay? That wasn't done.
Former Obama administration officials say they did not act sooner because they did not want to appear to be interfering in the election on the side of Hillary Clinton. Charlie?
Thanks, Chip.
All right, let me ask you this. If this is true, I mean, it's true because both sides are admitting it. Was it okay for the Democrats to tamper with their own election and make sure that Hillary won, but it's not okay for Russia to come in and do the same thing, right? I don't get it. Here is Schiff talking to CNN.
I think the Obama administration should have done a lot more when it became clear that not only was Russia intervening, but it was being directed at the highest levels of the Kremlin. And indeed, Senator Feinstein and I were repeatedly trying to make that case to the administration. Initially, when they didn't want to make attribution, they didn't want to publicly talk about Russia's role. And later, after we issued our own statement, and they did attribute the conduct to Russia, I was urging that they begin then the process of sanctioning Russia, the administration talking more forcefully about what the Russians had done. I think that was a mistake, but I have to contest what President Trump is also saying, because for Donald Trump, who openly egged on the Russians to hack Hillary Clinton's emails and celebrated every release of these stolen documents to criticize Obama, now is a bit like someone knowingly receiving stolen property blaming the police for not stopping the theft. So Donald Trump is in no position to complain here.
If you were president, what would you have done? What should President Obama have done?
Well, I think what he should have done and what I urged at the time was he should have spoken out to the American people and said, this is what Russia is doing. Russia has better stop it. And more than that, we are going to enter in conversations right now with our European allies who have similarly been the victim of Russian hacking and interference in their elections to embark on a new round of sanctions. And I think those sanctions should have been not only imposed earlier, but far stronger than the sanctions the Obama administration would ultimately impose after the election.
You heard it. Russia has better stop it. Here's a little bit more from Mr. Shiflis. And once again, on the same show on CNN.
You mentioned James Comey, the former FBI director. He also testified that the Obama attorney general, Loretta Lynch, improperly injected politics into the investigation of Hillary Clinton's emails. I want you to listen to what he told the Senate Intelligence Committee.
The attorney general had directed me not to call it an investigation, but instead to call it a matter, which confused me and concerned me. But that was one of the bricks in the load that led me to conclude I have to step away from the department.
Yes, but did he take notes?
Senator Dianne Feinstein was on this program recently, and she said that gave her a queasy feeling. The Senate Judiciary Committee is investigating this. Do you think that Loretta Lynch should come to Capitol Hill and testify about this?
You know, I think Senator Feinstein's comment I would agree with. It does give me a queasy feeling as well. There may be a perfectly accurate explanation by Loretta Lynch about why she thought matter was the appropriate term rather than investigation. So I wouldn't assume James Comey's characterization is the last word on it, even though I'm sure it's accurate. But I'd like to hear what Loretta Lynch's explanation for that is, either by having her come to the Hill or by having her speak publicly about what was.
Would you have her come to the House Intelligence Committee?
You know, I don't know that this is really part of the Russia investigation. This was more part of the Clinton email investigation. So I'm not sure it's within our purview. But I would like to hear what her explanation for that was. But I certainly wouldn't want that to distract us from what we need to do to get to the bottom of the Russia allegations.
Well, why isn't it part of the Russian investigation? I mean, the Russia investigation is already a lot broader than it's been originally meant to be. So here is a little bit more on Lynch.
The Senate is launching an investigation into Loretta Lynch and just exactly what she may have known, what she didn't know, and what she may have tried to influence. Joining me right now for more analysis, Fox News contributor and National Review contributing editor DeRoy Murdoch. DeRoy, what's your take on this?
High time, Trish, high time. I think that this Hillary Clinton investigation has stunk to high heaven all along, and there are all sorts of things that ought to be answered. We've heard about this business of the probe being called a matter rather than investigation. The word matter happens to coincide with the Clinton campaign's rhetoric. Why is the Department of Justice harmonizing its words with that of the Clinton campaign? Hillary Clinton came in her interview with the FBI. That was not done under oath. You have this massive investigation. She goes in to talk to the FBI. They don't put her hand on the Bible and tell her to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help her God. No grand jury ever was convened, and then you had immunity agreements that the FBI gave to members of the Clinton campaign, and they were told, all right, you get immunity, and by the way, hand us your laptop, and we'll destroy your laptop for you.
So you think this is Loretta Lynch basically influencing this, as she said apparently in this letter, or this correspondence, there was apparently a Clinton aide that was in touch with Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and the Clinton aide was being told by Wasserman Schultz that Lynch said she wouldn't let it go too far.
That's correct.
And meaning too far, meaning?
Too politically embarrassing in a way that might derail her political or presidential campaign. We had James Comey testify before the Senate Intelligence Committee. I think it was just last week. He said that apparently in private testimony, he said that he had a document or some communication indicating that Loretta Lynch said, look, don't worry, no matter where the evidence goes, we are not going to indict Hillary Clinton, in so many words. Now, that was behind closed doors. Who knows if that report is exactly correct? But it would seem to coincide with what we've seen, which is the FBI Department of Justice going through basically a sham investigation of Hillary Clinton. Yes, they did provide information that ultimately turned out to be embarrassing to her. But in terms of actually putting her into handcuffs, which is what should have happened, that never took place.
So where is this going to go? I mean, this kind of investigation, will Loretta Lynch be brought in to testify? Will Hillary Clinton be brought in to testify? Will James Comey be back?
I think that absolutely should happen. Look, Congress is supposed to do a couple of things. One is legislate and do things like repeal Obamacare, cut our taxes, et cetera. Another thing Congress is supposed to do is provide oversight of the federal government, and that includes looking at oversight of corruption. And this strikes me as total corruption, and the appropriate oversight committees should bring in Loretta Lynch, bring in James Comey, bring in Hillary Clinton. I think there ought to be a special counsel.
I'm going to play devil's advocate now, and there's sort of a path, if you would, that we often see new administrations, particularly when they're in a different party, give old administrations, because the fear always is you increasingly find yourself looking like a banana republic, which frankly we're kind of looking like right now, given all the Russia, innuendo. But you run that risk. And so is this sort of the pot calling the kettle black? Do we run the risk of Trump basically and his team turning around and doing the exact same thing that he's being subjected to by Democrats right now?
Look, there's a difference between criminalizing political differences and saying, well, we don't like Hillary Clinton's ideas, so let's throw her in jail. There's a difference between that and what she has done, which is multiple violations of the Espionage Act, I think possibly maybe witness tampering, destruction of evidence, destroying all those emails. There's a difference between not liking somebody's political views and persecuting them for that, and people breaking federal law over and over and over again and ultimately having to pay a price for that, because this is a country based on the idea of equal justice under law. And if we don't prosecute people who break the law, then it's indeed a banana republic where we have multiple levels of justice for different people in power.
You make
or out
a very
power.
Good point and an important distinction, I think, because in the case of Hillary Clinton, there was actual, I mean, you can count out exactly the incidences that were wrong. I mean,
yes.
Whether you're destroying evidence.
Felonious. I just word felonious.
Whether you are engaged in what appears to have been.
Well, you get the message there. I don't know if Lynch is in any potential trouble, but take a initial break here. 523-1450 AM Las Cruces. It is 7:18 and 6:26, 2017, June 26th, almost done. And we'll be back. I've got a little bit on journaling and a biblical take on UFOs, if you find that interesting. Every time UFOs come up, people seem to take notice.
After 9 days, I let the horse run free, 'cause the desert had turned to sea. There were plants and birds and rocks and things. There were sands and hills.
All right, so let me cover here your headlines for you. Drudge, eyes on court as the question is Justice Kennedy leaving? He's keeping his clerks in a mystery as to whether it's going to happen. Bankers warning, global crash could arrive with a vengeance. Americans are suddenly feeling better about a mediocre economy, though, and why ex-Obama aide says Trump's style is quicker, more decisive, and his tweets are said to contain genius. Unless you're Frankie or Kathy. Stalin tops Putin in Russian poll of greatest historical figures. Jeez. I guess Putin needs to kill more people. Coal use on rise in China, USA, India after major drop previously. And Jeff Bezos says Amazon is going to send the robots in to run Whole Foods. Asylum seekers in Canada who fled Trump now trapped in legal limbo. Isn't that hilarious? Yeah, the whole world was going to end. Massachusetts, terrified. Cape Cod is being warned. 150 great white sharks patrolling. Maybe you can snap up a few Ivy Leaguers. Regular sex can help prevent heart disease. Numbers of homeless veterans swelling in Los Angeles. And Ohio government websites hacked with ISIS message. Why would they choose Ohio? Now, I saw a clip of a plane in which the plane was shaking quite a bit, and they said it went on for 2 hours. Air Asia had to turn around, and at some point, the pilot came on board. They said there was a bang, and then the plane began to shake violently for 2 hours until they turned around. They were leaving Australia for Indonesia and had to turn around. The pilot got on the intercom and said, please pray. Talk about one statement that would freak you out. Trying to change or have the vote for health care before July the 4th. but support is slipping in the Senate. And they're putting Sheriff Joe Arpaio on trial for his supposed crimes. And they're nervous in Japan about a North Korea strike. Okay, so the most armed man in America, by the way, 3,000 weapons. We have a call. Thanks for the call, Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Aaron Kelly.
Morning, Aaron. What's up?
Hey, I'm finding it all very ironic. I think you do, too. How all this is turning out to be a hoax against Trump, and yet, all this criminality is starting to come out against Hillary and all the things that they did. Then I read where CNN had to retract some article that they had published that turned out to be totally false, more fake news. And it just seems to be snowballing in the opposite direction right now. There's plenty of evidence to ask for, investigations, yet there's no evidence against Trump, and they continue with this silly Russian thing. So
yeah.
I just think it's funny how it's turning.
Yeah, as the worm turns, well, it seems like there is not any evidence against Trump, and so the Russian investigation is still going to continue, but I don't think people are going to pay attention to it.
I don't think they're going to find anything either. Other than a couple of meetings, which was normal during a transition, what do they got? They got nothing.
They got a big fat nothing burger.
Yeah, and it's opening up. It's funny that it's become the crowbar that's opening up the all the old wounds and all the old hiding places and everything that Hillary and Loretta Lynch and Clinton and just the whole crowd was so corrupt. It's just unbelievable. I'd like to hear Frankie actually come up with some evidence or, a statement that's true rather than just, getting on there and just screaming. But we'll see how it goes.
All right. Thanks a lot, Aaron. Have a good day. All right, folks. Good points there. All right. I've got one thing I wanted to just mentioned to you. I ran into an article called Pen Paper Power, Five Benefits of Journal Writing. Now, this is not keeping a diary, but I thought it was kind of fascinating. They're saying if you've been through something traumatic, keeping a journal about your feelings and the experience helps you work through it. Now, and this is howlifeunfolds.com. This article, number one, writing by hand can make learning easier. Two, writing by hand can improve memory. Three, writing in a journal by hand helps you achieve maximum benefit of journaling. Four, writing by hand can have similar benefits to meditation. Five, writing by hand can help enhance creative expression. I found a little clip on the idea. They're talking in society about the fact that we're not an intimate society anymore. We don't have many of us don't have one single friend that we can talk to. So what's a fallback? Your journal. And as a matter of fact, you can tell your journal anything you want. And they have programs in computers that you can have a file that nobody else can open because it has a password. Put everything from your life in there. This is how doctors describe benefits of therapeutic journaling. And this is from about a year ago.
Might make you feel better emotionally and physically in this modern busy world. UW Health clinical psychologist Dr. Shyla Mergane is here today to tell us about therapeutic journaling and how it can improve our lives. So we're not talking, Shyla, about traditional like diaries.
No.
Today. What is therapeutic journaling?
Yeah, diaries is just recording the events of the day and your reactions to it. Therapeutic journaling is a specific technique to deal with distressing, upsetting situations or even mildly traumatic events that when they happen, we can't fully process them. So they become lodged in our memory with distressing emotions and intrusive thoughts. So writing about them in this way allows us to metabolize them so we can fully move forward.
So those are some of the, what are the other benefits of it?
There are health benefits. It's been found to actually boost our immune system. It also has been shown to promote well-being and improve our mood, and it can be helpful for conditions like asthma, cancer, rheumatoid arthritis, pain, even chronic insomnia as well.
Okay. And there's a method to it, a protocol for it that you're going to run through here. So how do people do it? There's a system that works best.
Yeah. Pick something that's been really upsetting and make sure it's a couple weeks out when you start the protocol. Write about it 4 days in a row consecutively for 15 to 20 minutes. Write continuously all your thoughts, reactions, emotions, what you have to feel. So get it out there and write for yourself. And sometimes people find it's helpful to hide or even destroy their writing. I had somebody recently take it out to the fire pit and burn it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And if you find you're really distressed, then definitely stop. Or if it's not healthy, and seek out some, you know, medical advice,
right,
see a physician or a psychologist or counselor.
Yeah, if it's making you feel worse, then it's probably not working for you. And I think one of the things you also mentioned was don't worry about grammar and punctuation. Just kind of let it flow as you write for yourself.
Yeah, you really want stream of consciousness just to get it out of us onto the paper. And what people find is that they actually have more meaning, and you know, they realize that they can become the author of their story and write their way into a new chapter.
All right.
All right, so I was thinking about this, you know, the Psalms, the book of Psalms is kind of written in that confessional style, very emotional, very focused, you know, poetic. A lot of it is poetic, but it's highly emotional, and I'm wondering if King David didn't follow that same advice. But they say that talk therapy is not, to a large extent, people with psychiatric conditions in America no longer do talk therapy. So in theory, the thing that caused you to feel bad in the first place or develop a psychiatric condition is not even addressed. It's kind of crazy. If you'll pardon the pun. 7:30 a.m. Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. Be right back. Here's some local news. I've got some stuff on UFOs and a guy, I don't know if it's a biblical explanation, but the guy's a pastor anyway. So I thought it was kind of interesting, you know? All right, so I was thinking last night, you know, people kind of like these UFO stories. And, you know, we've got a history, obviously, in New Mexico. You've got Roswell and all that. And I would have to, as this clip is playing, I'll go ahead and look up what the percentage of people that believe in UFOs is. We do have a phone call here. But I wonder what percent of people believe in UFOs, don't believe in them, or are undecided. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's JR. How are you doing, Kelly?
Good, JR. What's up?
I just want to ask him, Trump just doesn't assign a special prosecutor for the whole opposite side of this issue, that there, we know that, you know, the law's been broken. Well, what's he waiting on? I mean, it just seems like if he would enact something like that to go on, I think the rest of this stuff would just go away with him. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think if it was that easy, he would have already done it. I mean, I think you've got a special prosecutor out there. Special prosecutor is a landmine for Trump and the Republicans, because you never know what they're going to uncover. And I mean, I think everybody's hoping this thing just gets done and over with so we can get on to the business of seeing the country run and try to recover somewhat from Obama. But he might fire Mueller, although I doubt it. But in terms of, you know, Trump saying, I'm going to send a special prosecutor, that's not really where they come from in the first place. So, you know, that he didn't create the special prosecutor for the Russia case. So, you know, but I think we just need to work through it, and hopefully the Democrats will have learned a big lesson.
Right. All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks, Jared. Okay, so here anyway, apparently Jair's not big into UFOs, but I'm going to play this clip. It's self-explanatory, but it is another explanation of where UFOs come from. And what I like about this guy, Hugh Ross, is that he says the vast majority of UFOs, unidentified flying objects, actually have a understandable origin. It's a small percentage of them that don't, that he's talking about. Here we go. Our UFO hypothesis.
Every year, thousands of people see unidentified flying objects in the sky. Are these people having hallucinations? Or are these UFOs visitors from another planet? Nearly half of all Americans believe that UFOs really are extraterrestrials. But is there any credible evidence to actually prove this claim? The world's leading UFO researchers, Jacques Vallée, J. Allen Hynek, along with many other scientists, have investigated the credibility of UFO reports. And their findings agree. About 95% of all UFO sightings can be accounted for as either man-made objects or natural phenomena. Weather balloons, the planet Venus, atmospheric events, military aircraft, and even clever hoaxes are often reported as UFOs.
Now, I just looked it up. According to one survey done by National Geographic, about 36% of Americans believe in UFOs.
But experts also agree that a residual number of UFO sightings defy natural explanations. These residual UFOs, or RUFOs, make up roughly 5% of all UFO reports. What are these RUFOs? Could they be aliens from another planet? Are they some type of top-secret military aircraft? How can these sightings be explained? These questions and more will be addressed as we develop the RUFO hypothesis.
Welcome to this special edition of Reasons to Believe. In this video series, we're going to discuss many questions surrounding the mystery of UFOs. I'm your host, Greg Kokol, and I'm joined today by astronomer, minister, and UFO investigator, Dr. Hugh Ross. Dr. Ross has a PhD in astrophysics from the University of Toronto in Canada and has written several best-selling books about the interface between science and Christianity, including The Creator and the Cosmos and Beyond the Cosmos. Welcome, Hugh.
Thank you. And Greg, I'm really glad that we're addressing this question. It's one of the most frequently asked questions we get.
Well, joining us, cult researcher and Christian theologian and philosopher, Mr. Kenneth Samples. Welcome, Ken.
Hi, Greg. It's good to be with you and Hugh and talk about this important topic.
Yeah, well, thank you. Now, both of you, along with Dr. Mark Clark, who we'll meet later in the series, have written a book entitled Lights in the Sky and Little Green Men, A Rational Christian Look at UFOs and Extraterrestrials, and this is published by NAV Press. In fact, our viewers may want to get a hold of that book if they want to find out more information about what you call the RUFO hypothesis. Now, UFOs are a common feature in our popular culture, Hugh. The question is, how much of what we see in the movies and on television is actually true? Now, some people have a very sincere belief that there are UFOs, and not only that, but there are aliens trying to contact us. But it's your view that many of the sightings, if not most of them, can actually be explained by natural causes. What are some of the examples of natural causes that might explain UFO sightings here?
Well, I've been dealing with UFO sightings and reports since I was 15 years of age. And yes, the vast majority, you can come up with either a natural explanation or some human-based explanation. Probably 95 to 99% of what people report as UFOs are really IFOs, identifiable flying objects. In terms of natural indications, probably the two most common would be fireballs in the planet Venus. Now, a fireball is a meteor. It's a meteor that comes relatively close to the observer. And, you know, when I was doing amateur astronomy, I would see several of these per year. In fact, the biggest one I saw was 4 times the diameter of the moon. So they can be quite dramatic.
So almost like a falling star, but more dramatic.
Yeah, it's a meteor, but it's one that comes close to the observer.
Mm-hmm.
They can be moving slowly relative to the observer. They can take zigzag paths. They can leave a smoke trail. There can be sounds.
What about swamp gas? Wasn't this something that explains a lot of things, or is that?
Well, swamp gas was something that was a popular explanation in the days of the Blue Book Project, and that's probably a very small percentage of the identifiable flying objects.
Swamp gas. We'll take a little break here. 523-1450-805-6180 is your text. I don't have the texter with me, but here's your local weather.
The rain in the desert, you can't remember your name, because there ain't no one for to give you no pain.
All right, now here is the question, and this is from about 5 years ago. How many people believe in UFOs with George Stephanopoulos?
By National Geographic shows that 1 in 3 of us believe in UFOs, 80 million Americans, which may help explain why UFO sightings have been on the rise. And now, a new show on the National Geographic Channel, Chasing UFOs, is digging into these sightings to find out exactly what is going on. Amy Robach, back with that story.
Yes, George, good morning to you. And whether you believe in aliens or not, there are a lot of unexplained mysteries in the sky, and this brand new show examines all the information to try to get to the bottom of them.
Have you ever looked up and wondered, are we alone? It's a question Fox Mulder and Dana Scully tried to answer in the hit show The X-Files.
Do you believe in the existence of extraterrestrials?
Now, a new National Geographic unscientific online poll shows that more than 80 million Americans believe UFOs exist, and the truth is still out there.
What the hell?
Just this month alone, a rash of sightings across the country. Strange light formations over Colorado Springs, Fort Myers, Florida, and Salt Lake City, Utah. Back in 2008, some Central Texas residents were so sure they'd had close encounters of a very real kind, they made national headlines.
It was definitely not from around these parts.
This week, National Geographic Channel is exploring the mysteries of the unexplained in a brand new series called Chasing UFOs. A team of investigators chasing down real-life X-Files, reports of alien abduction, UFO sightings, even military cover-ups. There are skeptics and believers.
See, there's a light pulsating.
These UFO hunters gather witnesses searching for definitive evidence of extraterrestrial activity.
Four really bright orange lights, and they're really big. There's one there, 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 and there.
Whoa, what the heck is that? That's incredible.
And just like Scully and Mulder, this team even has a government insider dedicated to revealing the truth.
UFOs are real, and we need to make it permissible for scientists to study them without risking their career or livelihood.
So as they search for the truth by testing theories, these UFO hunters may even stumble on their own X-Files.
And while there will always be skeptics, most people agree on one thing. The government knows more than it's telling us. About 80% of people in the survey think the government has concealed information about UFOs. Always distrustful.
It's a question I get actually all the time from my time at the White House. People want to know, what did you know about all those UFOs when you were at the White House?
And what do you say?
Guys, sorry. But Chasing UFOs premieres on the National Geographic.
All right, so here's a little bit more from this. Possible, I guess, a possible Christian explanation of UFOs with you, Ross.
This is a big one. And what you're doing with there is Venus is a bright morning star. It's like 5 to 10 times brighter than it is when it's an evening star. So if you happen to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and Venus is at its closest approach to Earth, it's so bright you can read a newspaper by it, but people are stunned by the sight and will report it as a UFO.
Well, in addition to the natural explanations, there are some hoaxes, too, that explain UFO sightings. Is that right?
Well, I mean, you've got things like military aircraft, especially experimental military aircraft that the military doesn't want to be made public. I ran into a couple of those when I was a professional astronomer, these crafts hovering over our telescope. And, you know, there was a lot of denials, but later on we found out that the military really did have these kinds of craft.
Mm-hmm.
In the area of hoaxes, always watch out for the undergraduate societies and university campuses. The undergraduate campus where I was trained, University of British Columbia, the engineering students loved to pull off pranks of people who report as UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, would deliberately set off, say, a bunch of hydrogen balloons and have them explode at a particular time in a particular formation. And mm-hmm. they got great delight at the fact that thousands of people would report this as a UFO.
Okay. So, Hugh, let me make sure I understand this. There are a large number of sightings, the largest percentage really, 95% or more, that can be explained by naturalistic causes. But there is a small percentage, but really representing a very large number of sightings that simply cannot be explained by natural causes or by hoaxes or by hallucinations or by military aircraft or something else. And this is what you're calling the residual UFO.
That's correct. The okay. truly unidentified flying object. Mm-hmm.
Now, Ken, we hear in the popular media a lot about UFO sightings and abductions. Is that what we're talking about here with our UFOs, the first, second, and third kind of contacts that we see in the movies?
Well, after you've eliminated these natural man-made UFOs and you have this residual experiences, they could be any number of things. They may be a aerial phenomena, something that someone sees in the sky. It could be some kind of encounter with an alleged alien being. It could be a contactee experience where there is this experience of communicating information to a particular individual. So when we talk about UFO phenomena, it's a broad range of possible experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from something seen in the sky to a very intimate encounter.
Mm-hmm. And a personal intimate encounter, this would be like the third kind contact?
That's right. It could be people claim abduction experiences mm-hmm. where they're taken against their will. There are other people who have a religious experience and mm-hmm. allegedly produce religious material. So there's a broad range of experiences.
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of viewers, though, have the idea that anybody who claims to be abducted by an alien is a crackpot or crazy. Now, Hugh, you're a scientist. You think that there is a significant number, smaller percentage, but significant number that we have to take seriously. What is the hard physical evidence that compels you to take this seriously?
Well, of the 100,000 unidentifiable flying objects, the residual UFOs, only a tiny percentage would be the contactee or mm-hmm. the abduction situation. Typically, what you're dealing with is something that is clearly non-physical in nature, but it has physical effects. And I can give you some examples where, you know, people have an encounter with a UFO just a few feet away, and the thing is hovering, but there's no wind. There is no movement back and forth. There's no airflow. And so the observer is recognizing this isn't normal physics.
Mm-hmm.
Other places where there is a landing or a crash, but there's no debris left behind from the UFO. On the other hand, the grass will be burnt or there'll be charring, compression of the soil. So there are physical effects coming from this apparently non-physical mm-hmm. phenomena.
So one of your pieces of hard evidence from your perspective in this UFO area is the physical effects that are left behind that you can't ignore.
Physical effects, but they're not the kinds of physical effects you would see from physical objects.
So there's something else going on here that needs to be explored.
Something else going on. I mean, here you're talking about a flying object that is moving at, say, 15,000 miles per hour,
mm-hmm.
it's making sharp right-angle turns. Nothing physical can survive those accelerations and deaccelerations. There's no sonic booms. When they crash, there's no debris. On the other hand, there are substantial physical effects.
Mm-hmm.
No one has ever.
All right, so there's a second part of this. I'll play it tomorrow. But question, could these UFOs be demons? Could they be fallen angels? Here's a little Jim Gaffigan Cinnabon.
Zest on food. I am. I try to rationalize what I eat, but there's some food there's no reason to ever eat. Like a Cinnabon? I mean, tell me that place isn't run by Satan. You ever eat a Cinnabon? You have to take a nap halfway through. Oh, I think I need some insulin. and a wheelbarrow for my half a bun. It's kind of generous calling that a bun. It's the size of a beanbag chair. Now, should I sit in it or eat it? Hey, I could sit in it and eat it. Oh, this is sticky without pants on. He has his pants off in a lot of jokes. How about that Cinnabon odor? You ever been walking through the mall? You're like, what's that smell? Oh, I just got a cavity. Damn Cinnabons. Hey, I've done some humiliating things, but standing in that Cinnabon line is up there. Everyone's so filled with shame. No one's trying to make eye contact. I'm just here for the napkins. Not a pig like you guys. Because there's no reason to have a Cinnabon. I've tried to find one. Yeah. So I'm about to get on a plane. How about 8 pounds of cake? That's reasonable. A little dessert on the go.
All right, so covered a lot of ground today. And I guess we're going to find out if a member of the Supreme Court is going to be dropping out here pretty soon. Or what will happen with Lynch? Is Hillary in any potential trouble? Could they subpoena in Bill Clinton to give his statement of what happened on that airplane? And it doesn't look like Russia is going anywhere, but at the same time, you can say that anybody who is in that investigation has the possibility of getting in trouble if they've done anything wrong. So I guess you just never know. So we're supposed to have the possibility of some rain today. Hopefully that's going to happen. And there's more to be found out about that situation with the boat. I mean, who really knows what could have happened in that case, but how is it possible that nobody was listening or looking when they were putting out information from the other boat regarding Mayday or anything else? So we'll come back and have a little bit more on this story on the UFO tomorrow. I don't know if you find this interesting. It is kind of interesting to me. Supposedly somebody in the government was on the verge of getting up and saying aliens exist and UFOs exist and everything. I'll have to do some more research on that for tomorrow. But the upshot is, as far as I know, it's never been proved conclusively. Anyway, thanks for tuning in, and I hope you have a great day. Kelly O'Connell. And meet you back in 22 hours. Ciao. And Las Cruces.
See, I've been through the desert on a horse with no name. It felt good to be out of the rain. In the desert, you can't remember your name. Cause there ain't no one for to give you no pain. La, 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 la. La 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 la